Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lawrence is kind enough to let me do some takeovers here and there, and I get to do another one with the great Carmen Vitale of Fox Sports. Carmen became such a huge part of so many shows here in Chicago over the past football season. It was great to have her perspective on shows like Football Night in Chicago, of course, Bernstein and Holmes on 670, the Under Center podcast, for example, on NBC Sports Chicago. I feel like you're a little bit of everywhere in such a good way. I know you did. Shows the Fox as well. So I think where I want to start is, as we get ready for the Super Bowl, what were your biggest lessons that you learned about teams that you either had a hunch about early in the season? Like, I know you and I have talked a lot about the Packers and your study of Matt LaFleur's offense. And then how did you see those things play out in the regular season and then into the playoffs? Because covering the NFC North for Fox Sports, you studied the Lions a lot, and they were so close to a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I didn't anticipate having two teams in the divisional round of the NFC playoffs this year. I didn't have that much of a foresight on what was going to happen here. But as you mentioned, I mean, the Packers, this is nothing new with them. As Chicago Bears fans know very well, they have had this strategy with team building that has worked for the past three decades. It has transitioned to different quarterbacks. And basically, in the beginning, I was more like, until I see this not work, as someone who grew up in Chicago and grew up a Bears fan, I don't trust that it's not going to work again. Like, until I'm proven that this is wrong. And sure enough, it worked out for the Green Bay Packers. I think so much of that had to do with the fact that the team, on paper at least, was very well set up for a new quarterback. Between all of the young talent and then having what you were supposed to have a really good offensive line. You were supposed to have a really good running back tandem to back him up. You were supposed to have a really good defense that had eight first round picks on that side of the ball if everybody is healthy. It didn't quite work out that way. But at the same time, you saw enough out of Jordan Love so early that I'm like, whatever it is, he passed the eye test. He had it. He could process everything so quickly, and it was just a matter of execution on not only his part, but then his first and second year receivers, also their part. So watching that team kind of grow up with each other across the course of the season, it always seemed to be trending in the right direction, even when they went on a skid, even when things weren't going as well as they could have. There were injuries that they incurred, especially losing David Bakhtiari early. But the fact that Jordan Love overcame all of that and still developed and still improved and still kind of turned into a bona fide franchise quarterback by the end of the season, I cannot overstate how incredibly impressive that is. And I know, again, Bears fans don't want to hear that, but it's true. It happened. They made it. They went into Dallas. I was there. They kicked the Cowboys' ass. And they really came close in San Francisco to upsetting the now NFC champions. I think the future is very bright for them. I think the future is very bright for the Lions as well. I just published a story on foxsports.com talking about, listen, they are set up for sustained success. I know Dan Campbell, I commend him for being very realistic with the team. Like, this could have been our only shot. It's going to be twice as hard next year, which I think is the case. But I think that the Lions can weather the storm with the added motivation that they got of being within reach of the Super Bowl and having it ripped away from them for the sole fact that they are also young and they got so much production out of their young players like Sam Laporta, Jahmyr Gibbs, Brian Branch, Jack Campbell on the defensive side of the ball. Brad Holmes hit on all four of his first picks in the draft this year. If you get one, you're lucky. If you get one starter, he got four out of it. And that in his first four picks, they have four picks in the top 100 for the 2024 draft. I have full faith that Brad Holmes is going to be able to fill the minimal holes that are on that roster And again, just the intangible and the culture that Dan Campbell has instilled, it's going to carry them through next season as well. And they're going to be a hard out. So this is going to be a really tough division. And it's really exciting because I think that the Bears can be in the mix. Don't discount the Vikings either. I'm really interested to see what happens in the NFC North this year.
I am too. And I know you and I have received a ridiculous amount of unnecessary flack for our sports opinions that come from
hours that we're paid for, Layla. We're paid for them. Yeah, we're paid to have them.
Before I get into that, it's just it's really strange to see the patterns of behavior. Like, I was on the Under Center podcast for NBC Sports Chicago yesterday. I got asked a question about Justin Fields and the 2-minute drill late situations, and Dak Prescott and Mike McCarthy, and the purposeful lack of context that is going on. It's really like there's a whole group of people who purposefully want to misunderstand people and not understand that just because you can see what happened to Justin Fields doesn't mean you don't think that Caleb Williams might come here. You know, there's a lot of people I think who have spent way too much time in a arithmetic problem that's really an algebra problem. That all said, I feel like it's the same way when it came to you warning people, and it sounds so silly. Like, this is warning people that a team was good. Like, it's not like you were even warning people about like something
serious,
you know? Like, it's not like you were trying to warn people about, I don't know, say a virus that they should look out for, or you know, a storm or something along those lines. Here you are talking to people about what you were seeing in both Packers and the Lions, and the amount of just ridiculousness you got for it. Was there any like vindication, at least on your part? Not that you needed it and you shouldn't have to, but just knowing that what you said did hold weight and what you were observing did actually prove to be correct.
There was a little bit. I hesitated to really categorize it or go on any sort of victory lap because of the fact this is my job. I was doing my job, and this is what I'm paid to do. I'm paid to be an analyst. And I think the only way to really gain credibility is longevity. And I've only been on the NFC North beat for 2 years. So I understand that it looks like I'm coming out of nowhere with this. And that I think there's also a hesitancy on, you know, Chicago being such a big market, it's where I'm based, it's where I grew up. There's a hesitancy of ever wanting the Packers to be good. Bears fans are very prideful, and I understand that. And they haven't had a lot to hang their hat on in decades. And again, I was right there with you for so long. And so I know that there's a resistance, and there's a hope that things are going to change. And I hope that too. But that doesn't change the things that I've seen, the people that I've talked to, the conversations I've had. My opinion is not just my opinion. That is what I pride myself on in my job, is that I have a network of people that I trust and I rely on for their input and their opinions. And it's GMs all the way down to area scouts, to assistant coaches, to head coaches. I've built up a wonderful network, and I can't say enough about the wonderful people that have helped me along the way. So that when I have an opinion, even if it started as my own, I run it past multiple people to say, does this sound right? What's your perspective? You know, does this matter? How does this work? I'm asking a ton of questions. I annoy so many people on a daily basis in these conversations. But it forms into one very well thought out opinion. And it is really hard to put that out there and not have people understand that this is not coming from a place of I hate your team or I love this team. I'm not a fan. I can't cover four teams well and be a fan. If I was a Bears fan, if I came out and said I was a Bears fan, why would any Packers fan trust me to talk about the Packers or the Lions or whatever? It completely clouds your judgment. And so you have to, when you're in this position, you have to take the fan part out of yourself and say, okay, what am I objectively seeing? And I realized that you can't please all four teams with everything you say. So I just kind of, I joke that I have four fan bases that hate me. But as far as vindication goes, it's just a matter of doing my job and understanding that I need to do my job well. And if that, if I'm doing that, it'll get easier. I feel like people will start to trust me more, and I don't blame them for not trusting me yet, but I'm hoping that with the things that I've kind of been right on or seen in advance, that that will help people kind of trust me in the future.
To use the phrase real ones know, I think in this case, like, the real ones know, people who observe what you do on a daily basis and also just watch a lot of football know how founded you are. One of the favorite things that I know about you is your history in the league and how you came up and the relationship you built in Tampa Bay. What was your favorite part about working with so many talented people like Todd Bowles and being a part of seeing Bruce Arians construct that team and everything that went into it?
Honestly, I mean, the relationships by far were my favorite thing in the entire world. I can't thank the Bucks organization enough for never gatekeeping anything. And you give up autonomy over what you write, and you give up objectivity when you work for a team in most cases, because you're not allowed to be critical of the team. Your paychecks are signed by them. So it makes a lot of sense. Usually the trade-off, though, is that you get unparalleled access that no one else gets. And that has kind of receded a little bit in the NFL across some clubs. Tampa Bay is not one of them. The Bucks, I was allowed to go where, like, I was allowed to build my own relationships, and it allowed me to go into coaches' offices when I saw a play on Sunday and said, you know, what's that? Like, why did that work? And really dive into learning the game from the source, which is not an opportunity that many people have, like, anybody in this industry has really had, unless you come from that world. And as someone who obviously didn't play the game, who didn't coach the game, that provided me such a jump off point and a really unique perspective. But my favorite thing of working for a team, working inside that building was, I mean, obviously we won the Super Bowl when I was there. So I have a ring. It's really, really cool. It was a goal of mine, which was a completely misguided goal, because it was it's totally luck dependent on being in the right place at the right time. It's not like I did anything to get that ring, but it's really cool. But seeing how the team came together, and it was a COVID year, and everything seemed so discombobulated. And I think from the outside, you look at these Super Bowl teams and you're like, they have everything figured out. They have everything figured out behind the scenes. You know, they have all of the talent, but it's being used in the right way, and this, that, and the other. The way that it didn't feel like that in Tampa, there was so much going on behind the scenes because of the stressors of COVID, because of everything. We had Tom Brady, for crying out loud. It didn't seem like everybody had it figured out. But what was cool is to see everybody be able to overcome that and to persevere anyway and to figure out ways to win, regardless of if there were injuries, if there were feuds in the locker room, if there were feuds on the coaching staff. Not that there were a ton, don't get me wrong, but, like, it seemed a little bit just discombobulated. And I think it was so cool to see the fact that, like, come Sunday, though, those guys were ready and they were playing for each other. And they did have a good culture to fall back on, which is why I think I gravitate so hard to the Lions now, is because I recognize a really special culture there that doesn't exist at every team. And that's often what gets you through to the great successes in the NFL, is the intangibles. As much as it is what you have on paper, it's the intangibles of being able to withstand the inevitable storms that happen throughout an NFL season.
That's one of the wildest things to me, is in covering the NFL as much as you have, and to me, just even observing it, you pick up on what players say, and you pick up on actions, where coaches choose to work and where players want to stay and how they're saying things. You know, I think if you listen hard enough and you really pay attention to what people say after a certain amount of time in our business, you realize that there aren't a lot of good run teams in the league, which is such a crazy concept to me, that here we are talking about such a multi-billion dollar industry and the best of the best, and how the league just has unprecedented growth, even though they just had unprecedented growth. Like, it seems like everything the NFL touches turns to gold, and yet so many of the teams are just really poorly run. Yet it doesn't really matter unless you're covering each team and understanding why some get to the top and some don't.
I even look back on it because I realized that the more I learned about the game itself, even the more I realized I didn't know. And I think in some respects that's very uniquely female, because there's a lot of egos that you learn to work with in this industry. And I think it's most important. I think the best coaches and the best players are the ones that know what they don't know. And because the fact of the matter is, the more you learn, the more you realize that. And if you just look at a single football play, the amount of things that have to go right for it to work, it's a wonder to me that anything ever works. You have to get 11 guys, all with their own egos, all with their own agendas, all with their own skill sets, to work together and flawlessly execute a plan put in place by somebody else who is on the sideline telling you what to do. And if even one of those guys does one single thing wrong, if he releases wrong, if he takes the wrong route, if he has a different leverage than he's supposed to as a DB, if any of that goes wrong, the play does not work. And I wish more fans would also understand that part of it, where these are still humans. They are subject to human error. And the fact that you have anything go right is kind of insane. And the fact that you even have these organizations that do work well, when, again, it's just a, like, the team itself is a microcosm of the organization, where if one person isn't doing their job, that can derail the whole thing. Or you can have a really good culture that withstands all of this, that forgives those people and perseveres anyway. And that's where you get these really good teams, these really well-oiled machines, these ones that win the Super Bowl, or are just known as good organizations. I mean, I love the intricacies of the NFL world. That's why I've never wanted to really cover any other sport or anything like that, because the more I've gotten into this, the more I loved it as a kid. I've always loved football as a kid. But getting into it, it was the exact opposite of don't meet your heroes. It was like, no, meet your heroes, because you're going to love it even more.
That's so rewarding. And mm-hmm. I think you're so right about recognizing weaknesses. The one year that Ryan Pace recognized that he hadn't drafted well in the first round, he had the chance to trade for Khalil Mack. And look what happened. He got executive of the year that year. Mm-hmm. He got so much benefit of the doubt. I think that's the year that really bought him so many more years with the Bears organization and really fans, even though you started to see it even unravel a bit. The league had figured out Matt Nagy's offense, I'm convinced, at the end of that season. The trick plays again to the end zone, Barrett Allen. Like, they would have lost in 2018 to me, either to the Eagles or to the Saints that season. However, the concept of just people at that level understanding what they might have a deficiency in, and then being able to not only work with it, but then succeed with it, says a lot about it says a lot about just the lack of ego there. And the, mm-hmm. the minute you don't have it and you do something about it, that's when the money is made. You know, I think about the Bucks. Jenna Lane wrote an article, and I'm sure you were on top of this too at the time. It's just, that's the one that I saw, talking about the adjustments the Bucks made that Super Bowl season during the bye week, and how they were like, this isn't good enough, we need to fix this. What do you remember about that? And then being able to say, nope, this is not what we need to be doing right now. And then that self-evaluation is what helped lead to winning.
It was an evaluation that could have only come at that time, because from what I was able to see, again, like, it being COVID, I was a little further removed from the team than I was normally. But at the same time, that was Tom Brady's first year. There was so much that was different that year with him in, basically in charge. Not that anyone wants to give Tom even more credit than he gets. I feel like he's, you know, everybody's like, I don't want to hear any more about Tom Brady and how good he is. The way that he was putting together game plans in real time on the field. I mean, there were instances where he wouldn't get to the line and audible. He would get to the huddle, see what the defense was doing, and just say, hey, Mike Evans, go run a fade instead. Like, he would change individual routes on a play because he could recognize things that closely. And when you have a guy like that, it's really hard to mesh right away because these guys had never worked with Tom before. And contrary to what everyone wants, you can't just, training camp isn't long enough to gel and to mesh and to understand the nuances of your quarterback, especially one that's as commanding as Tom. And I think that bye week, everybody sat down, they evaluated everything that had happened up until that point. And it was like, okay, this is what I, like Tom saying, this is what I've seen that works. Bruce saying, this is what I've seen that works. Byron, okay, this is what works. And they formulated a plan based on the evidence they already had, which was, I remember like getting the schedule that year and realizing the bye was so late and being like, ugh. But I think it was a blessing in disguise because it gave them a large enough sample size to understand what worked and what didn't, so that they ran the table after that. And it was a meeting of the minds, as was the entire season. I think that Bruce, as big of a coach as he, a big of a personality as he is, as big of a coach as he is, as well established as a coach as he is and was at the time, he was very open to hearing what Tom had to say because Tom came in with that track record. And I don't know that that works with anyone else necessarily. Bruce was known as the quarterback whisperer, but what happens when you have a quarterback, you don't have to whisper. And instead of Bruce butting heads with him, it was a, hey, let's work together. And again, it goes back to checking your ego and being like, all right, this is what we need to do to win. And they did. And it was really, really cool to see that, you know, their confidence just gained steam every week after that bye week into the postseason. And then the postseason too. I mean, I remember players even defensively coming up to me after they won the NFC Championship in Green Bay. The minute they saw the game plan for the Chiefs, which was a week and a half, 2 weeks in advance, right? They were like, we knew we were winning the game. That was how much confidence those guys had. It was 2 weeks out, the day one install of the game plan against the Chiefs that Todd Bowles presented to the entire defense. I had multiple guys come up to me and tell me we knew we were winning then and there.
I felt like I had watched the real Super Bowl in the NFC Championship game.
I cried in that game. I didn't cry in the Super Bowl. I cried in the game.
You cried. I love you willing to admit that. I love that you, first of all, gave yourself the grace to actually cry. Because I'd be like, I'm wearing makeup. I can't let people see me do anything. Like, I would just sit there in weird silence.
Oh, I was in the press box sobbing.
Frozen.
Like my now coworker Greg Allman was like sitting there, like very much dadding me, like, it's okay, sweetie. I'm like, no, I know it's okay. It's amazing. I can't get over this. Oh my God, they've worked so hard for this. They're going to the Super Bowl. Anyway,
and you,
I derailed that.
And you work for the team. Like, you work for the team. You have a ring. I think it, you know, it's important to point out, like, media literacy. Lawrence always talks about that. And since this is a Hassabell production, I feel like that's a good thing to say. Like, there's a difference between your job at Fox Sports, where you're a roving reporter covering teams, and your job with Tampa and how you were able to celebrate in that moment. What was that like? Because we're not supposed to cheer in the press box.
I know, we're not. And actually, both of the last two of the last postseason games I've been to, two of the last three, the media has had to be reminded to not cheer in the press box. It was at AT&T in Dallas and then in San Francisco. No, it is. It's a weird juxtaposition because you're not quite media, but you're also treated like media in a lot of ways. From like players don't necessarily have the media literacy to know. And again, because I was allowed so much access, most of the players knew what I did and how I was different. And the fact that I was a fan. I was a fan of the team first, and that allowed me to not have to be so objective because I wasn't covering any other team. And again, my paychecks were signed by the Bucks. So no one was under any impression that I had, I wasn't a fan. And I was a fan of the team because I also got to know those guys on such a personal level that you want your guys to win. And even now, like, I don't cover them. So I'm like, I'm a Bucks fan now. There's so much, though, that goes into a season, an NFL season, on the other side of the building that no one really gets to see. Like the digital staff, the marketing staff, the PR staff. The hours that they put in to make that machine go, no one sees that. And it's not talked about very often. And it's often for very little pay. That's another thing that I think Mike Florio just came out with something about the analytics guys wanting to work for an NFL team and make NFL money. NFL money, if you are not a player or a coach or an executive, sucks. Sucks. I doubled my salary going to Fox Sports. Like,
wow.
I was being paid nothing. And so, and neither was really anyone on that side of the building, again, unless you're like C-suite or a big executive or whatever. And you pour your heart and soul into those jobs, again, for not little pay, for the chance that something like this happens where your team advances. And you've worked really hard in another aspect, but it still feels rewarding. And it's a really weird juxtaposition of the fact that so much of your job depends on something that you're not in control of. So much of our job depended on what happened on the field. So you're so invested in that because it means you're going to, it's the difference with whether or not you have a good day at work the next day is if the team wins or loses. And like, that's so hard to comprehend if you haven't been in it. And it's why you see team employees get rings, because yes, they didn't have anything to do with what happened on the field, but their jobs completely depended on that. And I think it's really cool, again, that the Bucks gave us rings. We got Super Bowl tickets. My dad and my brother got to come to the game. But it was so, you talk about vindication. That was what it was. It was like, I've put in, I think that was my fifth year with the team, but I put in 5 years with this team, poured my heart and soul into it. I've worked coaches' hours for a lot of it, honestly. I mean, I was working 50 to 60 hours a week at one point.
Easily.
And now I get to reap some of the benefits that these other guys do. And I get to have a shiny piece of jewelry and I get to have these experiences of bringing my family into it and all that other stuff. So I think media literacy is super important because while we're all different forms of journalists, it's not all the same. And okay. I think people need to understand those roles and the nuances between those roles a little bit more so you can understand the perspective that you're getting from each person, because it's completely different.
Yeah, and I don't mind that people don't know. I mind when they refuse to listen.
Refuse to know.
When they purposefully take you out of context, when they purposefully don't want to understand. I have a different job on Channel 5 than I have on 670, than I have on NBC Sports. You know, that's, and I know that can be hard when you see the same person. But what you just said matters. And what's funny is I was always told, because I used to be the field reporter for the Padres for Fox Sports San Diego, that players didn't know until they saw you on the plane or they saw you at the team hotel. And I don't know if you flew on the team plane or if you stayed at the team hotel, but like that was their way of knowing, oh, this person is our person. Like they work with us. And I think that's like an inside thing that I don't necessarily know people know, but they might want to.
I will never forget the day that it was after Bruce's staff came in 2019, and his predecessor, Dirk Cutter, had been really great to me too. Honestly, I wasn't as close with that staff, but I'd started to become close with them, so much so that Dirk had allowed me to stay out at practice, even when the media had to go into the media room. And, you know, usually only a portion of practice is open to the media, right? So when Bruce got hired, I went into his office. I don't know what gave me like the audacity to do this. Like, this is an NFL head coach and like someone who I had been a huge fan of. And here I am waltzing into his office and said, hey, you know, Dirk had let us kind of be outside during practice, even when the media goes in. I just want to, you know, run that by you, see how you feel about it. Can I stay? Like, I really think I get a lot out of it. And he's like, you work for us, right? And I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, I don't give a shit. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to stay at practice. And the way that I made it a point to stay out of practice every day, so much so that I remember Byron Leftwich, the offensive coordinator, a few weeks in, coming up to me and being like, you're really out here with us, aren't you? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, I like that. He's like, you're good by me. And it was just because they could see me. And it was just being around and being within their eye line. It makes a huge difference when it comes to these guys' trust in you and for their understanding of what you do and the fact that you're on their side.
Yeah.
It was great.
And that you needed to be in that job you had. I think mm-hmm. that's a big part of it. But I always like to say, when I'm genuinely trying to interview somebody, like I always try to speak the intention of my interview a lot of the time. I'm like, hey, I'm confused about this play. Or if you look bad, I look bad. Like, I'm not trying to have a gotcha moment here. I'm trying to figure out what's happening. You know, so I think it's not, they aren't owed that necessarily. In my role, but I always like to say, here's what I'm thinking before I ask a question, because I think the benefit of the doubt is always something that you have to earn. And I'm sure that they appreciated that from you.
Yeah. I think going forward, I've taken that experience though, and I've infused as much as I can into my current role, which again is having to be very objective, trying to get to the bottom of things and the truth of things, because I think this is a whole other conversation, but I love athlete-led media. I think, what the Kelce brothers are doing is awesome. You see it with a lot of former NBA guys and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's wonderful. But you are only getting one side of the story. Mm-hmm. And the job of journalists is to get to the truth. And so often I go into interviews and I do the same thing. I'm like, hey, like, I try to take the most positive thing. If I can help it, I don't want to be critical. If you warrant it, I will be critical. But if I'm not trying to have that gotcha moment. I'm just trying to figure out, because all my experience up until this point has taught me there is a reason behind all of this. There is a reason behind dysfunction. There is a reason behind something happening. There's a reason behind, a play that didn't work out. And sometimes it's not what you think it is. And so even when I'm being critical, or even when I'm trying to kind of get to the bottom of things, I do go in and I say, listen, I understand that this sucks, or this is hard, or it looks like to me on this play, like so-and-so was out of position. Was that the case? Am I getting the full picture? I'm just trying to understand. And I always come from a place of wanting to learn. And I think that people really respond to that rather than saying, well, I saw this and this should have been this and this and that. So why didn't that happen? Like which is like a very accusatory tone. I try to never be accusatory when I go into things, even when it's something that warrants criticism. And it stems from understanding who these guys are as people and being around them and having personal relationships with a ton of them that I always fall back on, like when I say something in an interview, like as an analyst on TV, whatever, would I want a coach seeing that? Because oftentimes they see it. And so I kind of, even if it's critical, I want it to be fair. But I want people to understand too that this is our job, is to find the truth. And that matters. I mean, it doesn't matter as much as like politics and like world events and all that other stuff. This is sports. But you lose a lot of that when you just have one side of the story, which I think there's a place for. Again, don't get me wrong, I'm not condemning athlete-led media. I think it's great that these guys are getting involved. I just want people to understand that we're not out to be these big, bad, gotcha journalists, yada, yada, yada. We're just trying to get to the truth, and that's valuable.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
No, and it's never as simple as whatever we think it is. Just like you were
Right.
talking about with Tom Brady. I feel like there are so many times where you could see Aaron Rodgers do that and people get jobs because they're around him, as we saw with the Bears. And if you don't have that information, if somebody's not brave enough, frankly, and secure enough in their job and in their position to tell you you're seeing somebody audible something or call a separate play before they get to the line of scrimmage from the field, then you don't have that information. And I feel like that's important. Like, have we all, I have my takes here and there, and we all say things out of frustration for what we see, but it truly is, to me, never as simple as like, oh, a team choked, or we saw,
No.
so and so can't perform in, a game-winning drive. It's never, ever that simple. And
No.
I think that's something that when we take different looks at it, when we point out separate breakdowns in a play, I feel like that's a lot of what's being attacked.
And that was one of my main reasons too for wanting to learn the intricacies of the game itself was because at the time for the Bucks, I could protect players that way. I could say, listen, they did this, and then so this was passed off to another player. And so yeah, it looks like, so and so got beat, when in reality, because of this check that the offense made, it was somebody else's responsibility. But that person either didn't see it or whatever. Like, there was an aspect of it to me of where I could protect guys by educating fans and saying, this isn't what you think it is, or this was so much harder than what it looked like, which is why it broke down. And I take that with me now, because I think that it's really useful context. There is so much context to everything about this game, whether that's on the field or even, rumors that you hear in the locker room and all the other stuff. There's so much context that matters. And we live in such a black and white society these days, especially online, where everything is either one extreme or the other, when in fact, most of the time, everything is in a gray area. There's reasons, and there's a middle ground there that we're not talking about, which goes back to the beginning of our conversation, and just about when you say things, people automatically assume that if you want to move on from Justin Fields, that you hate him. No. Like, there's so much more that goes into that decision than whether or not you believe Justin is a good player. And that is all I've been trying to say. But it goes back to what you said about people not hearing you or refusing to hear that part of the argument of, I am telling you that I like Justin Fields. I think he's a very talented player. But there's so much extra context around this that you need to factor in, because that factors into decisions like this, which I've seen firsthand.
Right.
So,
And
yeah.
no, this finish your thought. You were going
No, that was
somewhere.
it. I mean, I want people to live in that gray area a little bit more and realize that not everything is as simple as A or B. There's stuff in between there, and the context matters.
Yeah, I think the thing is, we're speaking to people who want to listen. Like, you click on this podcast and you want to hear what we have to say about it. It's a matter of those people helping spread the word to others. That's
I
probably
know. Do us
where,
a favor, guys. Do us a favor.
yeah, the people who want to misinterpret what we say so they feel better will be there. It's just a matter of how many people check them who aren't us. So there's that. But it speaks to something that I shared with you, I think, a few weeks ago. You and I both like the Instagram account Maybe Both, and she does YouTube now, Anna Kai, and she's from Philly, where they don't suffer fools, and she speaks a lot to dating and how a lot of women are putting up with things that they shouldn't have to put up with. And one of the things she talked about was Jalen Hurts's management team and his agent Nicole Lynn. And at the very end of that, of the description of how Nicole Lynn came to become a successful agent, which I strongly recommend you check out on her Instagram if you haven't, is Anna saying, as long as there are strong women succeeding, there will be weak men trolling. And I sent that to you. And you were like, yes, I needed to see this today. Because I think a lot of the stuff I come across, I share because I know somebody probably needs to see it that day. I need to see it that day.
I needed to see
it. It's always every day of the week. It is always on time, that phrase. And I shared it with you and it inspired you to talk your ish about something. So is it possible for you to share that story?
It was right after, you know, Jordan Love had a wonderful game towards the end of the season, or it was when the season wrapped up and you kind of knew it was the game, it was Bears game. And that's when you kind of knew like Jordan Love was it. And I went back and forth again about the victory lap thing, but then before the reason washed over me and I was like, this is my job. I don't need to do a victory lap for my job. I was right, sure. But what really got to me and what I ended up doing was as I was looking back on making sure that, you know, covering my own bases, that like, I've been very steadfast that Jordan Love was going to be good all season. And so I was looking back on things to make sure that that had been my message the entire time, just because I say a lot of stuff throughout the course of a season and wanted to make sure. And I came across an article in week 6 where, you know, the Packers were on a little bit of a skid. Green Bay fandom was melting down. And I was like, guys, we can't make any sweeping conclusions about the Green Bay Packers and Jordan Love in week 6. It's just not enough of the sample size. That's all I said. It was very benign. And I realized that I had muted that post, as I do a lot of my posts, because I do it all the time, Layla, because I can't go through it. I can't get the notifications. I don't want to see it. And it sucks because I like engaging with fans. And I think that there is some constructive conversation to be had. And I like knowing what their thoughts are. And it helps, again, that helps form my opinions as well. But so often this year, I had to mute my own work because I'm like, I cannot stand the vitriol that is being spewed my way for just stating an opinion. Something as benign as wait and see. Just wait, like wait on any conclusions. And I looked at this post and I looked at the comments in there, which ranged from how much of a dumbass I am to downright vulgar. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, again, we don't need to live in this world of extremes. So I quote tweeted it. And so instead of my victory lap, I ended up just being like, hey, listen, we don't have to do this. This is not necessary. We can disagree without being disrespectful. And that was the point of me doing that, more so that, I mean, the symptom of it was definitely some sort of, ha, I was right about Jordan Love, by the way, which I fully own. Like that was absolutely a symptom of that post. But the main message behind the post was just to be like, we do not have to live in this world of being so incredibly disrespectful for people doing their jobs. That's all I was doing, was doing my job. And again, it wasn't a hot take. I wasn't trying to elicit any sort of reaction with that. I was literally doing the opposite of saying, don't react, just wait. And I was trying to be a voice of reason. And it is so, it really does. And no one wants to hear this out of somebody who gets to watch football for a living. I get it. But it really weighs on your mental health. And yep. I've been in and out of therapy because of my job, solely. I mean, like, trust me, I've got my own issues. But I have solely been in and out of therapy for my job because this job requires you to have an armor. And it shouldn't have to be that way when somebody is paying you for your analysis because you have experience, because you have a network, because you are intelligent in the things that you say. And it only gets worse the further up you go. I mean, I have wonderful friends like yourself. You have a much bigger platform than I do. And then I have friends like Joy Taylor or Alex Curry or Cynthia Freeland or Colleen Wolfe. I mean, all of these women who are so incredibly good at their jobs. Mina Kimes, oh my God. So incredibly good at their jobs. And they are crucified for saying their opinion, even when it turns out to be right. So that was, it was a lot of pent up frustration. I was like, I need to say something. And then when you sent me that reel from, what's her actual name? I forget her actual name.
Anna Kai.
Anna, wonderful person, because yeah, I follow her now. When you sent me that, I was like, I'm pressing send. I'm pressing send on this thing that I said, because we do not need to live like this.
We don't. And I deal with it, and it has definitely weighed on my mental health. And I don't know why there are so many people who are just so, like, it's not the disagreement on like something about football. It's the personal insults that are just like, okay, but this is clearly not about me. Like, right. Clearly. But it's so true. Like, I hate using the term jealous, because the worst people I know were always the ones saying, oh, they're just jealous of me. And it's like, yes. No, you really just were a bad person.
I hate that excuse too. I really, really do.
Yeah, because it's always used by the worst people I knew. And I'm like, are you jealous or are you just a bad individual? But you can see the jealousy. And it's, I don't know, man. I like to say these days there are creators and there are complainers. And for those of us creating content, if you need us in order to have an existence, then that's on you.
It's absolutely a reflection of those people. And that's what you have to keep telling yourself. But that expends mental energy too, to what you were saying about like mental health. Like, even ignoring it takes mental energy to.
Oh, yeah. Ignoring it takes time that we don't feel like taking. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Blah. all right. Well, I'm not ending the pod on that. I want to ask you, what has been your favorite thing about either your job or what you've done recently that has inspired you, or something that you've really enjoyed as you get ready to have, like, Super Bowl week? Are you going to the Super Bowl, by the way? I didn't even ask.
I'll be there for the week. I'm going Tuesday to Friday, do some stuff on Radio
exciting.
Row. Yeah. It's such a wonderful, like, homecoming. That is actually one of my the favorite parts of my job, is these like events that get the entire NFL world, or at least a lot of it, together. My favorite week actually is the Combine, because I love the NFL Combine in Indy. It's such a small space and the NFL just takes it over. And you can't walk two blocks without running into somebody that you haven't seen in a while, or, you know, just the conversations that come out of the Combine and everything like that. It's wonderful. I love it. And that is honestly my favorite part of what I do, is the relationships that you get to build. And I feel so lucky to have landed at least tangentially in the Chicago market. I know I don't just cover the Bears, but because of, God, I'm probably gonna get snappy about this. You and Courtney Cronin and Caitlin Starkey and Cassie Carlson, you all have been so instrumental in making me feel so welcome in a role that I didn't know if I was ready for. So it's been awesome to like work with all of you guys. And then it's been even more wonderful to get to hang out with you guys outside of work and to have this support system, because being a woman in sports media is such a unique experience that unless you are a woman in sports media, you can't fully grasp or understand it. Like, my boyfriend is a reporter, but and for as wonderfully understanding as he is with so much, it doesn't compare to the girls that are in it with you. And so I just love that. That's been my favorite thing these last couple of seasons, and especially this season, is getting to get you guys and have that support system. Because it means so much. It really does.
Yay. Well, same here. Absolutely. I feel like we have a good group, and There were a couple of years right after I gotten laid off from NBC Sports Chicago where the amount of women reporters had seriously dwindled in sports. So to see it come back and to see it have numbers again, I feel like is really big. And I'm glad that we can form this good girl gang that we have going on. So it's been
I love it so much.
I know, right? Like, well, I mean, we do miss you, you know, we don't get to see you as often, which is a bummer. But it is.
And Ruthie Polinsky, I have to shout her out too, by the way. She was a newcomer to Chicago too, and she took it by storm.
Ruthie's had an amazing year. I am thrilled for what is next for her. Ugh. And yeah, the only problem is one of us is always working, so we can't
I know. And it's like every time like a group of us gets to hang out, it's like, well, we're missing at least one every single time, which is hard. But maybe in the off season, this football off season, I know that you do such a stellar job with so many sports. Dear God, I don't know how you keep up with all of it. Ruthie's the same way. I mean, Caitlin and Cassie both, you know, doing TV, having to cover multiple sports in Chicago. But I think that means that Courtney and I can be a little bit more flexible. Maybe.
I think we need like a sports girls day off where we all just take the day and go away. Like that would be my women in sports day. But who knows? We do sincerely appreciate it, Carmen. Thank you so much for joining me for this. Lawrence has been kind enough to let me take over a few episodes of House of L, and he's the one who suggested it. I was like, yeah, I definitely want to talk to Carmen. I love Lawrence.
He is also, I mean, you talk about somebody that has just championed everyone around him. He's such a light, I think, in everybody that meets him, because he will go to bat for everybody. And he is so encouraging. And the confidence boost I get every single time I do football night with him is unparalleled. I love it so much.
We are fans of all, that is for sure. Thank you so much, Carmen. I appreciate it, especially since I got to catch you before you go to Vegas for Super Bowl week. That's exciting.
Yeah, and I mean, I will, you know, let me know if you need some content from there, because I will be on Radio Row for at least 3 days, if not all four, so we'll see.
Oh, yeah, we should definitely hit you up. The other piece of it is, do you have to stay at either the Luxor or the Excalibur?
Nope. I made my own arrangements. Not that it's much. I mean, I think I'm staying at Planet Hollywood, but I did it because Planet Hollywood is not very expensive and it is right center strip. So like you can get to anywhere from Planet Hollywood. In all of my travels to Vegas, which have been plentiful, I'm very interested to see what a Super Bowl looks like, because I think that they're very well equipped to do that. And the gambling aspect of things with a bunch of NFL players coming into town is going to also be very interesting.
it'll be fun. I'm sure our friends at Circa in Las Vegas will also have a really big part of it. We're doing a Circa party for 670 the Sunday of Super Bowl Sunday before the game, so that'll be a lot of fun too. But yeah, you'll have to tell us about it. We'll need you to report back, because it sounds like it's going to be filled with so many stories.
It I'm sure it will be. It is every
year. Carmen, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.